We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall never surrender until, in God's good time, the new world, with all its power and might, steps forth to the rescue and the liberation of people.
In times of universal deceit, truth is the only rebellion left. Ruth Bader Ginsburg dies, leaving a vacancy on the Supreme Court. In the meantime, the riots continue and the violence and chaos is pervasive in our streets. This is leading Never Trumpers to realize that something has to stop this nonsense and someone with strength and determination has to fill the vacuum, and they're leaning toward President Trump. I'm Dr. Everett Piper, and this is The Rebellion. Welcome to today's edition of The Rebellion. We're going to talk about the vacancy in the Supreme Court that's been left as the result of the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I'm going to share with you my personal experience when I had the privilege of actually sitting in chambers when our case, the case of the Little Sisters of the Poor, was being heard by the Supreme Court of the United States. I'm going to share that story, and then we're going to talk about the principle of values and virtues and vacuums. And we're going to apply that, where we will apply that to the realization that many people are having right now, that there's a vacuum of leadership, there's a vacuum of virtue, there's a vacuum of values, and they're scared to death with the realization that that vacuum is being filled by violence. And they recognize that somebody of strength needs to stand in the way, and that someone is going to be Donald Trump. Now remember that you can subscribe to The Rebellion at patreon.com/Dr. Everett Piper, DREVERETTPIPER, patreon.com/Dr. Everett Piper. Please subscribe. You can do so at various levels, and if you do at the higher levels, you get a free autographed copy of one of my books, Not a Daycare, the bestseller, or Why I'm a Liberal and Other Conservative Ideas, and there are other perks, the newsletter, Zoom Q&A on a monthly basis, et cetera, et cetera. Subscribe to The Rebellion at patreon.com/Dr. Everett Piper. So, back to the story of the day. Ruth Bader Ginsburg dies, leaving a vacancy in the Supreme Court. This is a critical issue. We all recognize it. Now, frankly, as conservatives, we should recognize that the Supreme Court's power today is beyond what our founding fathers intended it to be. There are supposed to be three co-equal branches of the United States government: the legislative branch, the executive branch, and the judicial branch. But the judicial branch does not have the power and was not supposed to enter into issues of legislation. They were supposed to interpret and apply the law. And when I say interpret, they were not supposed to deconstruct and then reconstruct the Constitution in their own liking. They were supposed to read the Constitution as it was written in the clear language that it is intended, and then interpret and apply that language, that clear language, the language of the original founding fathers, to the legal situations of our day. That's their job. End of it. Pure and simple. They are not the legislative branch, and they're not the executive branch. They're the judicial branch. That's their job. There are lots of problems when they start assuming authority, when any one of the three branches assumes authority that it does not have. There's also a problem when the legislative branch, for example, doesn't do what it's supposed to do, when it abdicates its authority and gives that authority and gives that responsibility, gives their job over to the Supreme Court or over to the executive branch. The elected officials, those people that we choose to represent us in the Congress, should do their job. And if the Supreme Court starts intruding into the legislative function of government, the legislative branch should slap them on the nose and say, no, this is not your job. Back off. Stay away. We are the legislative branch. You are not. That's what the Senate should do. That's what the House should do. And if they don't do that, we should vote them out and elect somebody else that has the strength and the courage to fill the vacuum, which, again, is something we're going to talk about on this show. Vacuums are always filled. They'll either be filled as the result of our inactivity or they'll be filled because we stepped in and stopped the situation. But let's get back to my story. Oklahoma Wesleyan University was one of a handful of colleges back when the Obama administration issued its abortifacient mandate under Obamacare. If you recall, and I'm sure you do, when Obamacare was made the law of the land, one of the requirements that the Obamacare provision called for was that all organizations that provided health insurance to their employees had to include abortifacient drugs and abortive services to their employees as part of their health care. Now, obviously, I had a problem with that. I'm pro-life and I'm unapologetic about that. And the university I ran was pro-life by definition. I would not hire anyone at Oklahoma Wesleyan University if they weren't overtly and clearly pro-life. In fact, one of the litmus test questions that I would ask every faculty interview and every staff interview, every candidate that applied to work at Oklahoma Wesleyan University, whether it was staff, administration, or faculty, answered some litmus questions. For example, I would ask them, what's your view of Scripture? Then I would shut up and listen. If they told me the Bible is inerrant, infallible, authoritative, and true, the Word of God, the revealed Word of God, unchangeable, immutable, then good answer. If they didn't say that, they didn't get hired. I also asked them, what's your view of truth? Now, if they told me truth was an objective reality given by God and not a subjective postmodern construct created by man, good answer. If they didn't say that, I knew that they weren't stupid. I just knew that they weren't a good fit with our mission statement because we were bold and clear about our position on the objectivity of truth and the inerrancy of Scripture. Well, another litmus test question was, what's your view of marriage? If they couldn't tell me that God defines marriage and government doesn't, then they didn't get hired. I also asked them, what's their view of life? Now, if you can't tell me that God defines life and human and man doesn't, then first of all, you're lost morally, ontologically, and epistemologically. You're lost. But you have no business working at a Christian institution if you can't tell me that God defines life. But you know, the interesting thing is I interviewed more faculty candidates than you can imagine that couldn't tell me that simple fact. I would ask them what their view of life was, and they'd look at me with confused raised eyebrows. Well, what do you mean? Well, what's your view on pro-choice or pro-life? What's your view on abortion? And then I actually had a Nazarene, a woman who attended a holiness church, Nazarene church. She worked at Southern Nazarene University. Her husband worked at Southern Naz University, and her son was a faculty member at Southern Naz University. She was a lifelong Nazarene. I thought it was a slam dunk that she was a good mission fit for Oklahoma Wesleyan University as a nursing candidate, a candidate for our School of Nursing. So I asked her, what's your view of life? And she said, well, I think that's a political issue. I didn't say anything further. I just stopped because I knew you are not going to work here. This is not a political issue. This is a biblical issue. This is an ontological issue, an issue of reality. This is an epistemological issue, an issue as to how you know what a human being is. Do you know what a human being is because it's a political definition, or do you have knowledge, self-awareness, self-evident knowledge that's given to you by God, where you know a human being, you know a baby, you know an infant is a human being, and that no one has the right to take that human being's life? These are basic issues that we must be able to define if we're going to work within the Christian college community. And I had faculty candidates that could not answer these questions. So why do I spend time on this? The point is, Oklahoma Wesleyan was clearly, when I worked there, it was clearly pro-life because we said God defines life and you don't. And when the Obama administration told us that we had to start providing abortifacient drugs in our healthcare package, that we had to make those available through our health insurance, we said no. we will not do that. Well, if you recall, at the time, there was an order of nuns called the Little Sisters of the Poor. And the Little Sisters of the Poor, they have one mission. These are Catholics, obviously. It's an order of nuns. These are Catholic sisters who have one goal and one mission in life, and that is to attend to the poor, the sick, and the dying. That's what they do. Now, they also said no to the Obama administration. They said, we will not comply. We will not provide abortions and abortion services and abortifacient drugs in our healthcare package. If you recall, that case went all the way to the Supreme Court. Well, Oklahoma Wesleyan University, under my leadership, was a co-litigant in that case. In other words, our complaint against the Obama administration was combined with the complaint of the Little Sisters of the Poor. And the label for the case was the Little Sisters of the Poor versus the Obama administration, Kathleen Sebelius, the Obama administration, Health and Human Services. So we, under the banner, under the umbrella, the title of the Little Sisters of the Poor, we filed a lawsuit that went all the way to the Supreme Court. Now, I had the opportunity when that case was heard to sit in the chamber, sit in the Supreme Court, and watch the hearing, watch the trial. It was fascinating. It was fascinating. Now, here's the thing. We should care about this particular situation, this vacancy that Ruth Bader Ginsburg's death has left at the Supreme Court. Because the Little Sisters of the Poor were sitting there, and we were sitting there. These nuns were sitting in the Supreme Court. I was sitting in the Supreme Court with them, and it was days after Scalia died. Antonin Scalia died and left that vacancy in the Supreme Court. That obviously had a huge, huge impact on our case, because we know, or at least we think we know, that Antonin Scalia would have ruled in our favor because he was an outspoken proponent of the dignity of the human being and the right to life. But he died and left a vacancy. And those vacancies have a huge bearing on our constitutional freedoms. Stop and think about it. Stop and think about it. Had Scalia not died and left that vacancy, nobody in their right mind, Scalia obviously would have thought to himself, and he would have ruled accordingly as follows. The Little Sisters of the Poor are nuns. They're celibate. They don't need contraception, and surely they don't need or use contraception that's an abortifacient drug. The Little Sisters of the Poor are Catholic. The church is pretty clear. The Catholic Church is pretty clear on the use of contraception and on the issue of abortion. So who in their right mind would tell these nuns who are celibate, they don't have sex, they don't need any contraception, let alone that induces abortion? Who in their right mind is going to tell them that they have to include abortion-inducing drugs and contraception in their health care? These nuns are also women, women who understand their religion, their faith, their values, and their bodies a heck of a lot better than the federal government. So it's condescending, it's misogynistic, and it's anti-religious to tell these nuns what to do with their bodies, with their health care, and that the government is smarter than them in terms of what products they should avail themselves of. This is asinine, and Scalia would have recognized it. The same was true for Oklahoma Wesleyan University. We were pro-life by definition. You can't work there, as I said, unless you're pro-life. So the women that worked at Oklahoma Wesleyan, by their own choice, okay, nobody forced them to do so, don't use abortifacient drugs, because abortifacient drugs terminate a pregnancy by terminating a fetus. That's an abortion. That's killing a baby. And we don't do that. Nuns don't do that. And pro-life evangelicals don't do that. And again, who is the federal government to be telling these women that they know better, they, meaning the federal government, knows better about what type of health care these women should avail themselves of? Because someone in Washington, D.C. is smarter than these evangelical women or these Catholic nuns? Again, this is lunacy. It's misogynistic. It's condescending, and it's also religious bigotry. So we filed a lawsuit and took it all the way to the Supreme Court. And the outcome of that case was greatly affected by the death of Antonin Scalia. Now, by God's grace, there was a split in our case. It was a 4-4 vote. The liberals, obviously, we knew what they were going to do. We knew what they were going to do. And they did. They ruled against us, Ruth Bader Ginsburg leading the pack. Now, the conservatives ruled for us, but it was because there was a vacancy, there were only 8 justices, not 9. Therefore, the case, because of the split, the case got sent back to the various different federal jurisdictions for further review. Now, that was kind of a good result for us because we didn't lose, but we also really didn't win until Donald Trump became president. And then he retracted the abortifacient mandate, and therefore we didn't have to include it in our health care. Let's take a break and acknowledge our sponsors. And when we get back, let's talk about values, virtues, vice, and vacuums. I'm Dr. Everett Piper, and this is The Rebellion. Welcome back to The Rebellion. So let's talk about values, virtues, and vacuums. As I've said before in previous shows, one of the things I've learned as you assess morality, as you assess politics, as you assess the various different struggles for worldviews in our culture right now, I've learned that the principle of the vacuum is very important. You don't have to be a rocket scientist. You don't have to have a PhD in physics to understand this. Vacuums are filled. It's a void. It draws other things into it. When you turn on your vacuum cleaner, it works because the void is filled. And in physics, that's the same principle that always prevails. Nothing is always filled with something. Remember that. Nothing is always filled with something. A vortex, a black hole in the cosmos, or the Hoover vacuum cleaner, like I just said, in your living room. Everything is always going to respond to the principle of the vacuum. Well, this is true in your living room, and it's true in your boardroom, and it's true in the public square, and in the church foyer. If there's an absence of conviction and leadership and passion and virtue, then that absence, that vacuum, will draw most often negative things into it. The vacuum simply can't be resisted. Nothingness cannot sustain itself. I'll say that again. Nothingness cannot sustain itself. We need to understand, rest assured, a void will be filled. In the absence of goodness, cruelty thrives. Where there is no love, hatred prevails. You following me on this? Those without humility are inevitably arrogant. In other words, it draws your arrogance into the vacuum if you don't intentionally, in a disciplined fashion, exercise your humility. Take away integrity and gossip runs rampant. I'm giving you examples of how the vacuum is going to be filled morally, ontologically, ethically, epistemologically, theologically, politically. Vacuums will be filled. Without vision, the people perish, and on it goes. The principle of the vacuum. Well, a couple years ago, this whole principle of the vacuum thing came to mind when I was reading a story in the Philadelphia Inquirer written by Dinesh D'Souza. You know who he is. I'll remind you that at one time, he was the research scholar at the Hoover Institute at Stanford University. He later became president of King's College. And as you know, he's a political commentator and talking head. And he's also authored numerous books and produced some movies and documentaries on the left and Barack Obama. Well, D'Souza, in this article, was contending that the best explanation, now listen to this, the best explanation for the Muslim rage that we were seeing directed toward the West was not the commonly accepted argument of clashing religions, of Islam versus Christianity. Now, I'm not sure I agree with him completely, but his thesis was pretty fascinating. He was saying this, it's not that Muslims hate Christianity, It's that Muslims despise secularism, because secularism, radical secularism, leads to hedonism. It leads to this vacuum, this vacuous way to live, this virtuous way to live, this anything goes attitude of the West. So it wasn't the Orthodox Christian that Muslims were radical Islam was reacting against. It was the pretend Christians, the fake Christianity that the Muslims saw in the West, the hedonistic way of living that Christians in Europe and America were labeling as Christian faith. You get this? So D'Souza was arguing there's a vacuum. People are vacuous in their Christian identity. They are virtueless in their Christian identity. They are exercising vice rather than the good principles and the Beatitudes. The goodness of Christianity has fallen prey to this vacuous way of living. Thus, what is being sucked into the vacuum? Rage, riots, anger, accusation, violence, and vice, because the Christian West was not acting Christianly. That was D'Souza's whole premise. He was basically saying that the reason you're seeing riots in the streets, the reason you're seeing violence, the reason you're hearing chants of death to America, the reason you're hearing people saying things like F your Jesus, the reason you're seeing people burn the president in effigy, the reason you're seeing radical Islams terrorizing, beheading, executing people that disagree with them, is that the vacuum was filled. Where did the vacuum come from? It came from progressives. It came from those who are pretending that it doesn't matter what you believe as long as it works for you. It came from those who were saying, I believe in tolerance, but I can't tolerate your intolerance. It came from those who were saying, I know nothing can be known, and I'm absolutely sure that nothing is sure. It came from the left. And the rage and the anger and the riots that you saw in the streets were filling that vacuum. Does it sound familiar? As you look at Antifa, as you look at Black Lives Matter, what are they doing? They're filling the vacuum. They're filling the vacuum in the exact same way that radical Islam did and does. If we don't recognize the objective facts of our constitutional republic, if we don't acknowledge and recommit ourselves to the Judeo-Christian ethic that has served as the foundation of our culture, if we don't understand that this nonsense of saying it doesn't matter what you believe as long as it works for you is going to result in somebody that is going to oppress us saying, well, I believe that you should be silenced. I believe that you should be quiet. I believe that your Christianity should be put into legal jeopardy. I believe that you should be forced to live the way I tell you to live, to buy the health care that I require of you, to wear a mask when I tell you to wear a mask, to go into quarantine when I tell you to go into quarantine, to pay more taxes when I tell you to pay more taxes. I believe that you should bow and you should submit to my will. If we don't understand that the vacuum is going to be filled by that power, because Antifa and Black Lives Matter, the chaos in the streets is going to have to be solved. It just can't go on. Somebody is going to stop it. So it can be stopped by a hierarchy, or it can be stopped by a constitutional covenant. The interesting thing is there are some Never Trumpers right now that are actually admitting that we need somebody who's a pit bull. We need somebody that's strong and determined. We need somebody that is going to say, I don't care. Damn the torpedoes, if you will. I don't care. I'm going to step into this vacuum and I'm going to stop this nonsense because somebody needs to. Appeasement doesn't work. Chamberlain said peace in our time, but Churchill stepped forward and said, that's nonsense. Hitler does not desire peace. He desires conquest. And if we don't step forward and say no, then this absence of conviction, this absence of strength, this absence of having a spine is going to result in us losing the entire United Kingdom, of losing Great Britain. Well, the exact same thing is going to happen in the United States if we don't have somebody of strength and character. Character in the sense of, I will not submit. I will not let the chaos win. And frankly, Donald Trump seems to be the only one in Washington, D.C. who has enough of a damn the torpedo attitude to say that and do that. And even never Trumpers are starting to recognize it. Vacuums are always filled. When you live in a virtuous culture, you're going to have vice and violence. And then we have to recognize that somebody needs to stand in the way and stop it. That's what we need to remember as November 3rd comes. That's why, in spite of Donald Trump's peccadilloes and his flaws, and they obviously are many, the one asset, the one strength that he brings to the table is he has a damn the torpedo attitude. And that's what we need today in our leadership. I'm Dr. Everett Piper, and this is The Rebellion.